Dodgers at the center of it. Some people have charged the Leo DeRocher as having these pitchers throw at teams that year. A lot of resentment stirred up. Do you wish to comment on that?
Well, it's always been known that DeRocher felt that a pitcher who didn't use the knockdown was actually taking something away from his ability to get the batter out. Leo had a tendency to begin with to sort of bail out a little bit at the plate, and I think that in his mind he felt that the knockdown brought this on with a lot of hitters.
Oh, in other words, he as a player had trouble.
Yes, as a player, I was with Leo for a year before he retired, and he had a tendency to bail out some, which many hitters have, and I've done it myself, and we all have, but I think his perhaps was more predominant than most. But anyway, we always had pitchers on our club with the Dodgers that used the knockdown considerably. Hugh Casey used it a great deal. Hugh, in fact, didn't just knock hitters down, he hit them deliberately, simply because it used to aggravate Hugh to have a hitter come up and take his spikes and dig in, as we today see so much of, and nobody seems to be irritated by it. But this really got to Hugh, and if a fella happened to dig in too much to suit Hugh, or if he took too vicious a cutter up the plate, why, Hugh wouldn't think anything of really sticking one in his ribs, as he called it, to break it up. And one of the things about Hugh that always amazed me was he'd hit somebody and then walk over and walk with them from home plate down to first base and just practically begging them to say something about it so that they could end up in the free-for-all. Hugh always spoiled for a scrap.
No kidding. Yeah. I know the Dodgers were ahead by, what, 6.5, 7 games thereabouts, with a couple of months, maybe even a month left to play, I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and check. But Larry McPhail made a famous remark about the Cardinals are coming, and just mind your P's and Q's, otherwise they may catch you, and of course they did. Why do you think the Dodgers had trouble at the end of the 42 season? Of course, you won, what, your last 7 or 8, but the Cardinals just won a few more. It's a tremendous race.
Well, I'd have to say that the reason that we lost it was not so much our fault as it was the Cardinals, because the Cardinals just went on to win and win and win. They had a terribly long winning streak. If I'm not mistaken, I believe we won 104 ball games and still lost. And we won the last 8 games that we played. And there are people who have said that we choked. Well, I would like to say that I hope to God that I'm on a lot of clubs that choked winning 104. But anyway, McPhail did predict in a meeting in Brooklyn. He brought the whole ball team into the room upstairs, now not in our clubhouse, but upstairs, and we all sat around, and he predicted that we were going to lose the pennant, that we had about an 8 or 9 game lead. I did something that perhaps McPhail resented or misunderstood what I had in mind. But when he made that prediction, it irritated me to think that he felt like that we were not going to win it, that we were possibly not giving our best. And I made the statement that I'd bet him $250 he was wrong. Now, what I had in mind was that this was a cheap $250 to give him if we won the thing. What I wanted him to do was to say, I'll bet against the whole team. I felt this would irritate our club to the point they would go out and say, well, by golly, even though our president of the ball club or general manager is going against us, we'll prove he's wrong. I don't know whether that made sense to you right now when I'm telling you, and I know it didn't to Larry.
I'm just surprised that he'd say such a thing, given the fact he was general manager of the club.
Well,
I don't know the man.
I think in his mind he was trying to do exactly what I was doing, except in a reverse manner. Yeah. And so he, in turn, came out with a statement to the effect that this was what was wrong with us. We were just too cocksure of ourselves. And this was exactly the opposite of what I was trying to get over. Is I wanted him to do something that would really bring us up off the seat of our pants and go out and prove he was wrong.
Yeah.
Well, of course, like I said before, though, anybody that knows the way that the Cardinals came on that year. It was just win, win, win. I can't recall the number that they won, but it was
106.
I'm talking about that streak that they had, though. From the time he made that statement on, Lord, it seemed to me like as though they won somewhere maybe 44 out of maybe 54, something like that. It was a terrific win streak that they had going for them.
During the war, if I'm not mistaken, the Dodgers concentrated on signing young players. They didn't lower their scouting staff as much as the other teams. You had people like Gene Mock and Eddie Mixes and the young Gil Hodges and several others, Tommy Brown coming in. How did you, as a veteran star, feel about 17 and 18-year-olds playing alongside you?
Well, of course, the Dodgers, when I came to them in 39, I believe it was, they were now in the process of building. They made a deal to where they got Kirby Higbee from Philadelphia. They got Medwick from the Cardinals. They got Billy Herman from the
Cubs.
Yeah. And so that they had gotten a lot of older ball players, and they were picking up ball players wherever somebody asked waivers on a ball player that showed any possibilities at all. It seemed to me like that the Dodgers would grab them. I recall at one time they had 9 outfielders in spring training, all that are trying for various positions. And of course, Pete Reeser came on, and Pee Wee Reese at this stage, Campanella. He came later, Duke Snider came later, all of those of a later group came on, but it seemed to me that what we were doing was trying to grab off older ball players for the club to carry on until Larry and the minor league system could begin to produce young ball players. And Pee Wee Reese fitted in beautifully. It took him a little bit of time to get his feet settled good, because after all, he was just a youngster, as was Pete Reeser.
So but in other words, as a veteran, you didn't necessarily resent having an 18-year-old club.
Oh, good Lord.
Just be signed out of school. Well, and you recognized that this was a wartime emergency.
Well, you see, to begin with, we were definitely in need of somebody to place DeRocher, because DeRocher had been playing manager, and his arm was bad. He was having trouble getting the ball over from short to first. And I have to say this about DeRocher. I just wanted to have him, I believe he'd get rid of a ball faster than any man I've ever known. Seemed like as though the ball would never touch his glove before it was on the way to first base. And he was a genius in that respect, that he really made up a lot for the lack of his throwing ability. And I'm sure he had a much better arm prior to that, but this time his arm was pretty well gone. And so Pee Wee fitted very well into that category. I myself, when I joined the ball club, had had my shoulder torn out of socket 3 different times. I had a Nicola operation on my shoulder, which means that they took the muscle that runs over the top of the shoulder to hold it and socket it, and they drilled a hole through the shoulder and cut that muscle in two and placed it in the middle of the bone, and that's where it sits today. And so I was having problems there, and then when I was at Detroit, I had slid into second base in Philadelphia, where we are today, this being interviewed, and I tore the cartilage in my knee. And the doctors in Detroit at the Ford Hospital insisted that there was no way that I'd ever be able to play without an operation. And I was just as sure that my knee was improving. And this is a very hard-headed attitude for a ball player to take against the noted surgeon. But I was reasonably certain that I was right. And so that was how that I was sold to Brooklyn, because I refused to have the operation. And so I could run fairly well on a straight line, but whenever I had to make turns and such, I was really in trouble. And so when I joined the Dodgers, why, they put me in center field. We opened this, the day I joined was in Chicago, and I played in center field that day, and I finished the season, but it was a struggle. And when the season ended, why, they tried to send me to Columbus in the American Association, and the Columbus Club refused to take me simply because they said if I couldn't play in the major leagues because of my knee, I couldn't play in Double A or Triple A either. Well, as it turned out, I worked all winter long of jumping ditches and climbing hills and doing all the things that I thought might make those muscles, stretch. And by spring training, I was normal. But I was making $10,000 at the time, and Larry McPhail used this as a wedge to make me take a cut and cut me $2,500. And now then, I had to play in 115 games to get 1,250 of that cut that he made me take. And then if I played in 125, I got the hole. And all the time McPhail was in Brooklyn, I had to play for that extra 2,500 that he cut me based on how many games I played.
I see. What about spring training in Bear Mountain? What was it like?
Well, of course, we trained outdoors when the weather permitted. And then when there was snow and sleet and such on the ground, well, we would go up and go inside the gym at West Point. Mm-hmm. And we had a big net strung around the infield so that when we took batting practice, as far as you could drive a ball would be back of the infield, because this was the track where that they worked the horses. Yeah. And there wasn't sufficient space for us to take normal batting practice of seeing where the ball would go. But from that, I'm convinced that today that hitters would profit by hitting in a space like that to where they couldn't see that long fly ball traveling, and it would discourage them from trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark, and might make them a better hitter, of learning to direct the ball, to get away from the high fly ball that, as a rule, is nothing but a big lazy out. And I think that if they were to hit in a net like that, it might encourage them to say, I want to hit the ball on the line, get the feel of knowing I hit the ball good and being able to see what I did. Mm-hmm. And then second to it, might teach you to go to the opposite field and fool around instead of banging away for the fences as they do so much.
I see. So in 1944, you won the batting title. Was there anything special that year that gave you the impetus for a superlative effort? I think you batted, 357?
Yes. Well, I would be inclined to say that I just happened to get off to a better than average start, mm-hmm. and about mid-season, I was playing on the All-Star team in Pittsburgh, and I had I'd been hitting around 380 or 90, and I dropped to around 360 or 65 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I went out and I took batting practice in the old ballpark in Pittsburgh, and I had a clubhouse fellow throw to me. They wouldn't let me hit in the batting cage, so I went down in right field, and I had this fellow throw off of the grass to me, and I hit off of the grass out towards left field and center field. And it made a believer out of me in that I think that many times if a hitter would just take a little extra hitting and concentrate on what he is trying to do, that sometimes this can help him to come out of a slump. I know that one day made all the difference in the world with me, and so I the next day in the All-Star game, I promptly got a hit or two, and my confidence was restored, and I went right on the rest of the season without really getting into any type of a slump.
I see. I don't have too much tape left. I would like to ask you if you'd like to comment on any other wartime teammates on the Dodgers or any of the opposition. Or wartime conditions in general, travel restrictions?
Well, when you speak of travel restrictions, I always recall the trips that we used to make from New York to Boston. We would go by train, and of course you had the curtains all blacked out in the train so that all the curtains were drawn.
On the seaboard side.
Yes, nobody was allowed to have the curtains open. And then second, the trains invariably were just loaded fare thee well, and so that everybody that had a bag would put it in the aisle and use it as a seat if they weren't one of the fortunate ones to have a seat. And so we all rushed to the train after the games in Boston, heading back to New York, fighting to get a seat, and if you didn't, then you used your bag as a means of sitting down. So that was one of the things that I recall in regard to the war. And then during the winter months, while I was sitting in the stands in the polo grounds, my wife and I with some friends were watching, I believe it was a Giants football game. when it was announced that Pearl Harbor had been
attacked. Oh, you were there that
day. I was sitting there that day in the stands when this happened.
I see.
And of course, we all were shocked, and yet I don't think anyone had the slightest idea of just what a vast, terrible thing this was that it happened. It had to be that it took us days to realize the terrible importance of what had happened. But everybody was shocked in the stands, and it was really something that I'll always remember. And then, of course, speaking of war again, my brother Harry was in the service. Due to the fact that my knee had been torn up and I had the shoulder operation, the Army rejected me, and so I went to the Aleutians during the war. Along with, let's see, Stan Musial and Danny Littweiler.
He told me about that term. Was Hank Barroy?
Hank Barroy.
No,
Dixie Howell wasn't. I was Dixie Walker. That was a Dixie that was on that group.
Then he mistook himself in the letter. Okay, I'll make a point of that.
Yeah. And
fine.
So we went to the Aleutians, and of course, I've always had a lack of acid in my system, and therefore fried foods really just deal me a fit. And while we were up there, why, for the second time in my life, my stomach acted up. And of course, when I was with the Yankees, why, they sent me to Johns Hopkins as a kid of about 21 years of age, where they pumped my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I came back from the Aleutians, why, I had to have it done again. And they came up with the same results, a lack of acid and fried foods and so forth. And then the year after that, Arthur Patterson, who's now here as vice president of the Dodgers, and Paul Wehner and Luke Sewell